It's Northeast Delta Dental Radio with Tom Raffio.
Welcome to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. I'm Tom Raffio for Northeast Delta Dental Radio, and I'm also the head coach of the dental insurance company known as Northeast Delta Dental. Well, it's hard to believe it's August 8th and 9th, depending on when you're listening to this. If you're listening to this on August 8th, we appear right after the 9 o'clock news at 9:05, and if you're listening to this on August 9th, we show up at 7:05 right after the 7 o'clock news. And with me this weekend is Dr. Joe Arante, who has worked with me for several years here at Northeast Delta Dental. And Joe's title is Vice President, Provider Network and Clinical Strategies. And prior to that was the President and CEO of Previsor, which is a software company, a very innovative software company that powers our health rural wellness program. And once we got that established, and it's still one of our subsidiaries, as I said, it powers the Health World Wellness Program. Joe agreed to lead our provider network and clinical strategies organization, doing a great job. Last week's show, we had Dr. Richard Berryman, who actually works for Joe. Richard is a consultant now working virtually, of course, because of COVID. And Richard actually did a wonderful job explaining the history of dental schools, the history of dental in general, why sort of historically the mouth was separated from the body in terms of, you know, med schools versus, you know, dental schools. And one of the books we referenced is a book called Teeth by Mary Otto, which really gets into, you know, the whole history behind oral health and how it's really there's disparities across the United States. And that's actually one of the projects that Dr. Joe is working on with me, is oral health disparities in northern New England. But this week's show, which we are taping, so we are socially distanced because of COVID, is Visiting the Dentist, What Should I Expect Now That Dentists Have All Reopened? And just as a quick background on that, basically, in short, on March 16th, the American Dental Association recommended that dentists only see emergency cases or urgent cases, and for the most part, the dental community complied with that. And then fast forward a couple months, May 11th, with a lot of work, a lot of training, a lot of understanding, and with some very specific guidelines, dentists in New Hampshire opened up on May 11th. They opened up in Maine on May 18th, and then the Tuesday after Memorial Day for Vermont for some procedures, and then fully on June 1st. And Joe recently attended a seminar or a webinar on the topics of dentist reopening. And later in the show, I'm going to ask Joe to talk about some of the national trends on reopening. I can tell you from where I sit, based on the claims and call statistics, people are flocking back to the dentist, and probably we're about 95% of the claim volume from where we were. But Joe, with all of your background, and just for a listening audience, why don't you describe your background? You've taught at Columbia. You've been a practicing dentist. You ran the dental operation down at Blue Cross of Mass. You've owned your own insurance company. You've owned your own dental service operations. Obviously, dental has been your life. So why don't you briefly describe that and then get into visiting a dentist and what should we expect now?
Sure, Tom. And you actually did a pretty good job of describing my career. It's about 40 years now and going strong, and I've been a dentist for 40 years and practiced, started an insurance company, ran different insurance companies, ran different provider or provision of care or care delivery systems in dentistry as well as outside of dentistry to specialized populations of people in nursing homes and things like that. So have a pretty varied career so far, and enjoying my time here in New Hampshire now with Northeast Delta Dental. So one of the things that we wanted to talk a little bit about today was that what people should expect when they go back to the dentist now, which is very important that they do, and I'll talk about that in a second as well. But before your appointment, you're likely to get a call, or you may get a call from your dental team, your dental office, asking you some health-related questions before your scheduled visit. They'll probably ask you to limit the number of people that you bring with you, and they may actually ask you to wait outside or wait in your car until they're ready for you. And there also, you'll notice lots of additional cleaning and sanitation measures that they're doing. When you walk in, they may take your temperature. They may ask you some health-related questions again. You'll also notice some things that have changed in the office, and that you'll see lots of protective equipment on the clinicians that are going to be taking care of you. You may see face screens or facial screens and all sorts of other garb, gowns that they might be wearing. And you'll probably notice that magazines are removed from the waiting room and any high-touch items are gone. So everything's all about keeping it safe for the clinicians as well as keeping it safe for you as patients. And I would say that it's important to make sure that you keep your dental appointments because I get asked often, can I put off my dental appointment until after the COVID-19 pandemic is over? And, you know, regular dental appointments are a really important part of your overall health and taking care of your overall health. And things in, you know, dental decay, periodontal disease, all those kinds of things don't stop because of a pandemic. They actually continue to progress and they get more expensive and more painful as time goes on to treat. And so it's important to identify these things as quickly as possible, get them taken care of as quickly as possible. And so keeping appointments, regular appointments during the pandemic and doing it in as safe a manner as possible, which the dentists are doing for you, is really important.
And that, to me, was one of the ironies of only seeing emergency cases during the period of time, roughly March 16th through May 11th, because, of course, emergencies, non-emergencies can turn into emergencies. And that, as you know, since my career isn't quite as long as you, but basically being doing dental health group, dental health insurance my whole life, we all know the beauty of the program, which is that it's preventative based. And as you know, we want people to go to the dentist. And even before COVID, we know statistically that even when an employer pays for the premium, for the entire premium of their employees, still, depending on the industry, 10 to 30% of people weren't going to dentists for various reasons, including if they had an adverse, you know, childhood experience, or they may feel that they're above it all, or they're just, you know, procrastinate. And so we're hoping that COVID didn't make that worse. And I'm telling you, I was at the dentist a couple of weeks ago, Dr. Joe, and I mean, if anything, I felt safer than ever. I mean, everything was pristine, on time, flawless, super clean. I don't know how else to describe it. And it's just really a great experience. So anybody out there listening to the sound of our voices, as Joe said, I would definitely encourage you to go to the dentist. And we'll return to that topic. But with all of your four decades of background, which, you know, includes, you know, teaching at Columbia, running a couple companies, being a dentist, tell us how you landed in Concord, New Hampshire. Because I know the story, but I want you to tell the listening
story. Well, I have two grandsons, actually, now. We had a subsequent one born while we were here. But I have grandchildren here in Concord, New Hampshire, which is what brought me here, because prior to moving up here, I was commuting back and forth from the Boston area to Manhattan with my position at Columbia University. And I got to see my grandkids about once every 4 to 6 weeks. And now being here, I get to see them 3 to 4 times a week. So it's and they're at the age, one's going to be 6 in a month or so, and the other one's 8 months old. And this is the age that they still want to be around their grandparents. They still like their grandparents, and so they look up to us. And so we wanted to be around them as much as we could at this point. Once they get to be teenagers, they may not be as interested in us at that point. So
we're segueing into family advice, but you're absolutely right.
That's right.
And of course, As most people know, I have one granddaughter living with me and then two out in the Denver area, and it definitely is a wonderful, delightful experience. And as an aside, if you're a grandparent or a grandmother or a father, you want to get the baby to the dentist by one or when the first tooth erupts. And as you know, Joe, when we were rearing our kids, or at least ourselves, it was the rule of thumb was more like age four, but now we know get the toddler in there, you know, at least by age one or when the first tooth erupts. In fact, we have a program called, you know, Baby the Dentist by One. So how did that, as a sidebar here, how did that science evolve where, you know, maybe 50 years ago, 40 years ago, maybe even 30 years ago, it was like get to the dentist by age four, but now it's more like one. How did that all evolve?
Well, there really was no science behind that. That what happened, why 4 years old, was that was around the age that most dentists felt that they could actually do treatment on a child. And because as obviously they're, when they're 1 year old or 1.5 years old, it's pretty difficult to do any treatment. And we were, as a profession, very focused on just doing treatment, not really focused on the prevention of the disease and some of the strategies that you could help parents understand, you know, to be able to, you know, mitigate the disease or prevent the disease. For example, often I used to get moms, young moms and dads, that would think, well, it's just the milk teeth or the baby teeth, so it doesn't really matter. But they're actually very important because they hold space and position for the permanent teeth to come in, and you'll get much more misalignment of teeth if the baby teeth aren't there. Or they'll say, you know, you don't really need to do anything because they're just the baby teeth, they're temporary. And it's actually pretty important to, even at 1 year old, to, even if you're using a face cloth to wipe off the teeth and take the plaque off of them, you may not be able to brush or brush with a toothpaste, but you can at least use a washcloth and take off the plaque. And they do accumulate plaque and things like that. So there's a whole bunch of information and strategies that can be shared with young parents about how to maintain those teeth as best as possible.
Great. That's a great succinct summary of that. And we've had another dentist that works for Joe, Dr. Mitch Corray. We've had him on a prior show explaining that. And actually, my wife Ellen brought our granddaughter to Mitch, and it was really interesting to see how that whole process works. Welcome to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. Tom Raffio for Northeast Delta Dental Radio. And I'm also the head coach of the dental insurance company known as Northeast Delta Dental. Here we are, August 8th and 9th. In prior years, I would be telling you about how I did in the Northeast Delta Dental Mount Washington Road Race or the Beach to Beacon Road Race in Maine. Most races, of course, have been canceled. Some are now running virtually, like the Bill Lutie 5-Mile Road Race. And Millennium Running actually has put on a series of races socially distanced that have been going on every Saturday for the past several weeks and have found myself feeling safe there. It's the only way I can describe it. It's like lining up for a Southwest Airlines flight, but more distance between people. You have your spot, and there's a starting mat, and so the runner seated number one goes, and then 5 to 7 seconds later, runner number two goes, and you're pretty much seated by your time, so there's very little passing going on, because if you do a 30-minute 5K normally, you're not going to do all of a sudden a 20-minute 5K, so if you're socially distanced and appropriately timed, it really works out quite nicely. And I had that same experience going to the dentist the other day. I felt so safe. Everything was so pristine, and even got my teeth polished, and I got the fluoride varnish, which is part of the Northeast Delta Dental Health World Wellness Program. If we have time, we'll get into that. But I'd like to switch gears now with all of Dr. Joe Arante's experience. And one of the things he is able to do is synthesize a lot of information that sometimes comes from other national experts, and it can be a little confusing. But I've asked Joe, and Joe has been delighted to participate in webinars put on by the American Dental Association with their chief economist and talking about some of the national trends in patient volume returning and confidence and staffing. And I think in general, Maine, New Hampshire, and Vermont were actually sort of ahead of the curve on the national statistics. But when you attended that seminar or webinar on the 21st of July, tell us some of the things you sort of gleaned from that nationally, Joe.
Well, it was so the Health Policy Institute, which is a part of the ADA, as Tom said, it's the chief economist of the ADA. They've been doing surveys back to the beginning of April or towards the end of March, every other week, of thousands of dentists in the United States. So it's pretty nice to see the trend during this period of our pandemic. And what they're seeing is that obviously because of the ADA guidance to not treat patients other than emergency type care during the height of the pandemic and when a lot of things were unknown, we saw a precipitous drop off in patient volume, and in a lot of people got laid off in dental offices. And what we've seen since then, since states have started to reopen, is a very sharp return to pretty close to normal. Nationally, it's around 75% of pre-COVID levels, and there's some variation in patient volume by specialty, but in general, it's about 75%. About 90% of the staff and everybody else has been hired back, which has really sharply gone up. And the other thing that's interesting, they contracted with somebody to do some consumer attitude research, and I found that really interesting, that consumers, about 85% of people are prepared, either have gone back to the dentist or are prepared to go back or need a slight nudge in that they would like to see the CDC and others report that it is safe. But, more than half of the people are very comfortable going back. I think as people understand what the dental profession has done to make it safe, they'll even be more comfortable doing that. So it's been a very good story relative to the profession coming back and the demand for services coming back. Patients want to get their dental care done, and they want to get it taken care of because I think they realize the importance of it.
It's been remarkable. As you know, I'm a half-full type person, glass being half-full, but even I am really super pumped with this, because I knew our dentists and hygienists and dental assistants could get it all together, because as you know better than me, really since the 80s and 90s with HIV, dentists and hygienists and other professionals have been hyper attentive to infection control, and now this even more so. So I knew that they could get it together, and I saw all the webinars that were going on between March 16th and, you know, through April, so I knew that dentists were ready. I wasn't as sure, you know, that patients would have that level of confidence. So as you know, we did a lot of surveying and of our own employees and as well as others, and it was surprising that people have been, I don't know if flocking is too strong of a word, but they've been going back, and I'm sure my experience is not atypical, and that it's actually typical of the confidence. I mean, I felt even more confident. And then you have these sort of other added benefits, is that, the dental office can't afford to be, running behind. So they have a team outside taking your temperature, doing this, that, and you quickly go into the waiting room, and you're only there for a minute or two, and then you're shuttled to, the operatory very carefully, and it's totally pristine. There's no magazines, no crumbs anywhere, and just a really good experience. So I'm encouraging, you know, people, you know, to get back to the dentist, and I'm sure that you've been called. And that's the other thing that's been happening too, with the, some of the downtime that, you know, dental offices had in April, they were able to kind of, you know, plan for all these revisits. What about personal protection equipment? As you know, and I think many of our listening audience know, we distributed about 110,000 KN95 masks and about 8,000 gowns, and we've done a certain amount of, you know, financial relief for the dental community, and overall we've given back about $27 million to the community. But putting that aside, like, in terms of what did the chief economist say about kind of PPE supply, and I keep getting different views of it. I have some dentists who continue to say they're challenged by it, and others are saying not. So what did the webinar say about that?
Well, generally what he said, because they do have questions about that, that it has not changed much in the last couple of weeks, and it's still kind of spotty around the country. There are places around the country that are still experiencing, whether it's N95 masks or KN95 masks or gowns or different components of the personal protective equipment, their dentists are having difficulty getting it. And then there's other areas where they have a plentiful supply of it. And I know that nobody's practicing without it, because it's at the core of the guidance from the CDC and others about how to treat patients in a dental practice. But there are still the supply chain for that type of equipment is not totally back up. And as we get these little flare-ups, like out in California and Texas, it seems like they're still trying to reserve some of it for the hospitals where they're treating active COVID patients. And so there's still some areas where it's difficult to get. But in general, it's improved greatly since April, let's say.
That's good. And you mentioned those hot spots so quickly, and then I'd like to talk about teledentistry. When hot spots have occurred, and thank God it hasn't been around northern New England, but let's say Texas and California, Florida, has that dampened the enthusiasm for patients to go back to the dentist?
Well, that's interesting, because that was a specific question that they asked, that they designed the surveys around finding out. And they actually correlated the hot spots down to the county level with, you know, patient demand or patient volume in dental offices. And it doesn't seem to have impacted it negatively in any way. The patient volume in the dental offices is as great in counties that have flare-ups going on right now with COVID as it is in any of the others nationally. So what that tells the ADA and tells us, I think generally speaking, is that patients are pretty confident in the things that have been put in place to protect them and to protect everybody involved in the care delivery. And so it hasn't impacted it in any negative way at all. It's about the same in hotspot counties as well as other counties.
And that's a really good insight, because that, again, proves that patients are confident in their dentist. So we've got about a minute left, and Northeast Teledental, as you know, has supported the concept of teledentistry financially as well as with the underserved population. So the quick question is, can teledentistry substitute for a dental visit?
So while it's probably not as good as a dental visit, because if you need any treatment, it's actually pretty good. It's very good, I would say, if you're experiencing an emergency and you require some evaluation. It's very good to determine whether, like during the height of the pandemic, whether your situation rose to the level of an emergency type care required or not, so that you could get care. So there's a lot that can be done with teledentistry. Obviously, we can't fill a tooth if you have a filling that came out or a cavity. We can't do certain things through teledentistry, but you can certainly get insight into what's happening. You can get evaluated, and you can get recommendations what you can do by yourself mitigate the problem until you can get into a dental office. So I think teledentistry really came to the forefront during the pandemic. And while it's not being used tremendously by the smaller practices, the larger practices, group practices, are using it quite a bit as a great way to introduce populations or people into a dental practice. And it's a great way for you as a patient to evaluate whether you want to go to that office or not through a teledentistry appointment.
Great explanation, and I referenced Brian Horchdorfer in my op-ed as one that's really been using it. And, of course, we also financially supported that, and the governor just signed into law telehealth law that supported all the measures that were taken during the pandemic. So, Joe, as always, you did a great job. We didn't have time to get into health or wellness, but suffice to say out there, listening audience, if you have Delta Dental, make sure that you ask your dentist about the Previse or a health or wellness program, and depending on your score, you might be entitled to some enhanced benefits like a third or fourth cleaning and a Delta Floyd varnish. Dr. Joe, thank you for joining me this weekend, and thank you for having grandchildren in Concord. It's been a mitzvah for
thank
us.
You.